From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Hey there, children of night, and welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello to everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever-wonderful, ever-vampiric, ever-cape-wearing, and my friend, my producer, and the heartthrob of Bob After Dark, Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count Panic.
Hey, Bob. Excited to be back here. Another edition of Bob After Dark, or should I say Camp?
Camp Bob After Dark. You are correct. Camp Bob After Dark is upon us.
If you're watching on the Jed TV, you can see Bob is in front of a nice toasty campfire.
I certainly am.
Is it too hot?
No, it's just right. All month long here on Bob After Dark, we're looking at camp-related things, haunted, spooky camps. And all of that kind of all that stuff, things you would expect at a camp, but spooky.
Yeah, camp, but spooky. Now, Bob, yes. We talked a little about camps last week. You weren't the biggest camper.
No.
Neither was I. I was in Boy Scouts, but I only went to summer camp once. I've been camping in the dunes, of course, but yeah. I never got too much into it. But for this, we are pulling out all the stops. We are going camping.
We are. But before we do that, Count Panic, I need your weekend update.
Oh, Bob, I'm going to tell you about that right now. It was a fun-filled weekend. I got to visit a quarry.
A quarry? Bob. The one right here that I saw a Mothman over.
Exactly.
Ooh!
Time out here. Let me tell you about this. So the Thornton Quarry, I guess they give tours twice a year, but it's pretty backed up. I think there's like a few years of people being on a waiting list. But the Thornton Quarry, the world's second biggest quarry, might be the biggest in the U.S. as far as the research has been going, but for sure the second biggest in the world. And I did think about you because I do recall your story of Mothman. Now, I'm a little hazy on exactly where and why. I didn't want to tell too many people the story because I wasn't too sure about it. But this happened at the Thornton Quarry?
It happened at the Thornton Quarry, right over 80 right there.
So what did you see?
I saw what I believe to be Mothman. I don't know.
Like rising out of the quarry, right?
It was floating above it. It had flapping wings. It was there.
I didn't see Mothman, but I did see a lot of rocks.
Did you tell somebody about the Mothman encounter while you were there?
No, because, I wasn't too... Again, it's your story to tell people.
Oh, that's fair.
And I've never seen the Mothman personally, and I wasn't quite sure exactly if you saw it in the quarry or around the quarry. You were passing through the quarry or passing over the quarry. We got the opportunity to go in the quarry, deep down the quarry, and it was a pretty cool look because you're always looking in from the position of the highway, right? Looking down, not so much looking up. But yeah, I remember your Mothman story. One of you, because you saw him a couple times, right?
The one time I could have been or couldn't have been, but that time at the quarry was my go to. That's what I was featuring on the trail of the Lake Michigan Mothman, the Small Town Monsters documentary. That's what I was on for it. So
maybe he has a side gig there.
Something like that.
Yeah, it was at the quarry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty neat though. How about you? How was your weekend?
My weekend was exciting. I was at the Milwaukee Pride Festival, which was exciting. Yeah. I went up there to do some work for the one of the Pawstar company I do occasional work for.
Milwaukee. We're big in Milwaukee.
We are big in Milwaukee. And, I'm a supporter and whatnot of that, the LGBTQ+ community. I'm a big ally, so I support, and I was there, and it was a really good time. Always a positive experience there. And
did you drink any New Glarus?
I did not. No, it was too hot for me. I had one beer.
Too
all
hot
weekend.
For a beer.
I did, man. You get to hydrate. I'm getting too old, man.
A beer has water in it. You hydrate with a beer. Think about all those days in the hot sun.
Yeah, I'm just getting old now, so that's. I had one Miller Lite though. That was my entire time there. I had one Miller Lite, but that's okay. Save time for another time.
Yeah, sure. So a historically haunted city too.
We've had Milwaukee things on here before, but no, I had a good time. And then I've spent the past couple days. I've been playing disc golf.
I've seen this. You're big because you,
it has turned into. And it's turned into my favorite hobby I've ever had.
Really?
Yeah, man. It's I shouldn't say that because Ghostbusters is still a thing, but like, disc golf is the most zen hobby I've ever had. How about that?
How about have you ever gotten into the pickleball?
We talked about this last time. No, I've never played it. I did look it up, though. It's what they consider, it's like ping pong but tennis, right?
Yeah, it's a mix. It's a, like in between tennis and ping pong. It's nice leisurely.
Which is like badminton, right? Isn't that basically?
It's way more fun, Bob.
It's way more fun than badminton.
You got to get into the pickleball. And think about it. It's a nice workout, but you're not doing too much over reacting.
Do you know disc golf? I just walk from one place to another. I throw things. It's like my speed. You know, and I've had the most fun with disc golf over the past week. Yeah. I've gone several times, and it is just, I went today before we recorded.
How do you win at that?
I went. You got to throw it in the basket in the least amount of throws.
Really?
Yeah, I've. It has mellowed me out.
Really?
To anytime I feel like that urge. I mean, I'm still going to the gym and stuff, which is nice. But like, you know, I can't go to the gym if I'm all anxious and hyped up. We learned our lesson the last time,
yeah,
right, Count?
Yeah,
so,
yeah, I can't do that.
You know, if I'm feeling a little anxious or nervous, I go to the disc golf course, and I'm that is my happy place.
Do they have like a competition for disc golf?
There's competitions just like any other sport. There's leagues and stuff. Yeah, I am not that good.
Be a champion.
But I, you know, if any of the fans out there in the Bob After Darkverse are fans of the disc golf, you should slide into those DMs and be like, hey, Bob, we should go play around.
Challenge them.
You know, listener Mark and I went earlier. Yeah. It was a good time.
All right, well, good for you. Yeah. Disc golf, who knew?
Yes. So if this is your first time ever watching or listening to an episode of Bob After Dark, we talk about legends, lore, supernatural, things that go bump on the light, lights in the sky, and, of course, Count Panic's dream job from when he was a child.
Oh, man. It was one of a couple different things, Bob. One, I wanted to be like a pro wrestler.
I think most people, you know, we grew up in that world.
Or the Pope. I want to be the Pope.
The first Pope wrestler.
The first wrestling Pope of all time. Not a gimmick Pope, but like a...
No, like an actual, like, the Pope wrestles.
And both were pretty hard to achieve, being a Pope or a pro wrestler.
You have
wrestler.
To perform how many miracles to be Pope? Is it two?
No, to be a saint.
To be a saint, you have to perform two miracles.
To be Pope, you can just be a
you can just get to be, you got to be voted in, and you have to move your
the
way
smoke
through.
Comes out.
Yeah, the chimney, it's like when Willy Wonka announced.
Kinda.
I get it, I know. Yeah. You just know that in order for them to declare a Pope dead, they have to hit him with a hammer?
I didn't know that.
I'm sure John's going to call in and be like, Bob, what are you talking about? But
I don't know.
I kid you not, 100%, like... I read this when Pope John Paul died.
Of course.
They hit him with a hammer like three times. Mm-hmm. And they're like, Pope John Paul, are you alive?
Well, not like vicious.
I'm not like vicious, but like a tap with a hammer.
Okay, just a check, right?
Yes, I'm sure John's going to call in and be like, no, Bob, that's...
I don't know.
You are over-exaggerating this. And I'm sorry to my Catholic audience. I know you're
just going...
There.
You're hearing what you're...
I've heard this, and I could be wrong. Yeah. I'll have that answer for you the next time we're on the show here.
Well, I know what the thing with the Pope situation, too. You usually die as Pope. Now, we learned that you could retire as Pope because Pope Benedict stepped
Benedict
down.
Benedict did step down.
So, I mean, it's not like... It's kind of like this Mr. Pierogi situation I'm in right now. I'm Mr. Pierogi.
Are you comparing the role to Mr. Pierogi to the Pope, sir?
No,
man,
no.
Who's our Pope right now? It's,
I'm not comparing.
What's the current Pope in the
Francis.
Catholic Francis? He's going to be angry that you're comparing.
Unless
Frankie wants to be a Mr. Pierogi.
The Mr. Pierogi situation.
Then you guys could do like a trading spaces, right?
Well, you could. Well, the last Mr. Pierogi was there for 25 years. He was the first Mr. Pierogi. He went for 25 years. Then he stepped down for 25 years. But, I mean, really, Mr. Pierogi, you could take it as far as you really wanted, I guess, at the end of the day. But they should do a thing where a new Mr. Pierogi is elected at Big Frank's. The smoke comes out of Big Frank's, and that's when they get their new Mr. Pierogi.
Now, I'm going to stop you there.
Yeah.
I appreciate Big Frank's, you know, for what they do. But it's a whiting thing, so you have to have it coming out of center lounge.
Center lounge.
Well, you the smoke coming out of the center lounge, right. Then you know there's a new Mr. Pierogi.
We'll take it to center lounge then.
Yes.
We know it well.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. But how do we get to the Pope? Oh, yeah, wrestler or a Pope. Well, how about you? What would you want to be when you grew up?
Oh, jeez. A radio talk show host.
Really?
I kid you not.
Oh, wow.
I always wanted to work in radio.
Here you are.
Film. Film and radio is what I wanted to do.
And you did both.
And I've done both, so that's kind of cool.
Star of stage, screen, and movies.
movies. So maybe someday I'll write my book. I've always talked about it. But anyway, Bob After Dark is split up into two segments. That's where you, you the fans get to listen to what we the two parts of the show. Our first part's the weird, spooky news of the week. That's where you, the fans, submit news articles to me about the weird, unusual news articles, anything from high strangeness, advances in science that borderline on science fiction, or maybe like some creepy ghost making it to major media attention. And then we dive into the meat and potatoes of the episode, you see, and that's when we talk about the lore of the week.
Yeah.
Yes. By the way, Steve, if you're listening, hi. You're supposed to be on the show, but you got stuck in traffic.
So he's going to call in. He's going to call in with his story later.
Well, we'll talk about that later. But let's dive in, Count Panic. Let's talk a little bit about the news, spooky news of the week.
What is it?
Our first one comes to us from our pal of the show, a good friend of mine, Jim Norman, listens every week just about, and this got sent to us from The Debrief. Intelligence officials say U.S. have retrieved craft of non-human origin. This is written by Leslie Keene and Ralph Blumenthal. I'm very sorry, Blue. Blumenthal. Former intelligence officer turned whistleblower has given Congress and in the intelligence community inspector general extensive classified information about a deeply covert program that he says possesses retrieved intact and partially intact craft of non-human origin. That's a lot of words. The information, he says, has been illegally withheld from Congress, and he has filed a complaint alleging that he has suffered illegal retaliation for his confidential disclosures reported here for the first time. Other intelligence offices, both active and retired, with knowledge of these programs through their work in various agencies, have independently provided similar collaborating information both on and off the record. The whistleblower, David Charles Grush, 36, a decorated former combat officer in Afghanistan, is a veteran of the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, the NGA, and the National the NRO, RECONNAISSANCE. I can't pronounce that, but yeah, the NRO. He served as the office's representative to the Unidentified Aerial Phenomena Task Force from 2019 to 2021. And from late 2021 to July 2022, he was the NGA's co-lead for the UAP analysis and its representative to the task force. The task force was established to investigate what were once called unidentified flying objects, or UFOs, are now officially called unidentified anomalous phenomena, or the UAP. The task force was led by the Department of the Navy under the Office of the the Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence and Security. These are a lot of departments, by the way. I apologize, guys. It has been since recognized and all expanded into the All-Domain Anomaly Resolution Office to include investigations of objects operating underwater. So UFOs, submerged UFOs, all of that is now just one giant agency, okay?
Really?
Grush said that the recoveries of partial fragments through and up to the intact vehicles have been made for decades, though the present day by the government, its allies, and the defense contractors. Analysis has determined that the object retrieved are of exotic origin, non-human intelligence, whether extraterrestrial or unknown origin. Based on the vehicle morphologies and material science testing and the possession of unique atomic arrangements and radiological signatures, he said. In filing this complaint, Grush is represented by a lawyer who has served as the original Intelligence Community Inspector General, the ICIG. We're not talking about prosaic origins or identities, Grush, for referencing information he provided to Congress in the current ICIG. The material includes intact and partially intact vehicles. In accordance with protocols, Grush provided the Defense Office of pre-publication and secretary review at the Department of Defense with the information he intended to disclose to us. His on-the-record statements were all cleared for open publication on April 4th and 6th, 2023, in documents provided to us. Grush's disclosures and those non-public witnesses under new protective provisions of the latest defense appropriations bill signal a growing determination by some in the government to unravel a colossal enigma with national security implications that has bedeviled the military and tantalized the public going back to World War II and beyond. For many decades, Air Force has carried out disinformation campaign to discredit reported sightings of unexplained objects. Now, with two public hearings and many classified briefings under its belt, Congress is pressing for answers. Carly Nell, a recently retired Army colonel, has current aerospace executive who was the Army's liaison for the UAP task force from 2021 to 2022 and worked with Grush there, characterizes Grush as beyond reproach. Christopher Mellon, who spent 20 years in the United States Intelligence Committee, has served Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Intelligence, has worked with Congress for years on unidentified aerial phenomena. And I quote, a number of well-placed current and former officials have shared detailed information with me regarding this alleged program, including insights into the history, governing documents, and location where a craft was allegedly abandoned and recovered, Mellon said. However, it is a delicate matter getting that this is potentially explosive information into the right hands for validation. This is made harder by the fact that, rightly or wrongly, a number of potential sources do not trust the leadership of the All-Domain Anomaly Resolution Office established by Congress. But some insiders are now willing to take the risk of coming forward for the first time with knowledge of these recovery programs. Jonathan Gray is a generational officer of the United States intelligence community with a top secret clearance who is currently works for the National Air and Space Intelligence Center, or NASIC, where the analysis of the UAP has been his focus. All right. A lot of abbreviations. There's a lot going on there. You want me to summarize this for you?
Please do.
There's a whistleblower who is a part of the government who is saying that UFOs are real and that we have partially built unidentified object craft in our possession, both partially and complete objects.
Yeah.
So, in essence, this whistleblower has said that aliens are real, in essence.
Yeah.
So, hashtag panic stick.
Bob, I think this is totally true because we've learned the past few years, right? Let alone the past few years here, that the news outlets, the government, right? Even our government, our Congress, they're looking over these UFO cases. They're taking it more seriously. Reports have been leaking left and right. This happened during COVID, though. So it's like this one thing, like, oh, okay. UFOs do exist. Okay, we're still worried about this pandemic here, of course. But the fact that the UFO information is out there now to the public, this whistleblower does not surprise me. It's just confirming what we already know, that UFOs are out there and we all want to believe.
Yes, we want to believe it's out there. There is no question now, guys. Why hide it? You know, the government has said that these things are real. You might as well say that you have them in your possession. You're not going to surprise any of us.
Open up Area 51, I say.
Everything in there is probably gone, man. It's probably in Area 52 now, or even
you're
Area
saying
53.
That they so it's like a
dude. Facade. I would have skedaddled out of there once I knew a bunch of people were trying to charge in there.
Remember, a couple years back, we were just there was a group like, let's all meet at Area 51. They can't stop us all, right? We'll storm Area 51. I don't think anybody really ever showed up, but you're saying that everybody was distracted by Area 51. They moved it to Area 52.
Yes.
All right, that makes sense. But, Bob, this is right, confirming what we already know. UFOs exist.
UFOs exist. Now there's a government whistleblower saying that.
Yeah.
We have a caller. We'll take him live on air.
We do have a call. We'll take it live.
Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hey, Bob. You know what? I would go with that whistleblower and say the illegal aliens are around.
Oh, well, thank you, John. I appreciate that.
But you know what? I don't know about hitting the Pope three times in the head to see if he's gone. I mean, wouldn't one good smack do it? Or he's got it? Why has it got to be three?
Yeah, what's the reasoning behind this?
Listen, I don't know. I was hoping you could tell me more, John.
Well,
you're usually my expert when it comes to Catholicism, Lord, not, you know.
Yeah, well, you know what? I never heard that. But as soon as you mentioned that, I did Google it. And they said that is not technically a form It's on social media, but it's not technically a form, if you want to believe what Google says, that to confirm a Pope sketch, you got to be hit three times in the head with a hammer.
Seems a little silly. I don't know.
So do they do it, or don't they do it?
They don't.
No. They said that's not the regular procedure, you know, to find out if I guess you could do it to anybody, right? Why? I mean,
what makes
why would it
so
be
special?
The Pope that you have to hit him three times with a hammer? But no, if you Google it like I did, to be honest with you, it just says that's just something that's floating out on social media that somebody started. So they said that's not a normal procedure to confirm a Pope's death or not.
So the myth is busted, Bob.
Myth is busted. Thanks for calling in, John.
I'm getting, hey, one more thing.
Get, oh, yeah, go. You're good.
Yeah, disc golf. You know what? call me in to count on that one of these days when you guys go out.
Sounds good. I think there's one. There's Pulaski Park right there in Hammond. There's one.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Okay, and then Riverside Park in Hammond.
In Munster.
Columbia, and then Lemon Lake Park and Cedar Lake got one, too.
Absolutely, and then Hidden Lake in Merrillville.
Oh, okay. So
I think the Bob After Dark disc golf outing needs to become a thing.
Hey, there you go. No, that's good. That's got a good ring to it. You never know. Let's try it, huh?
Sounds good. Thank you so much for calling in, John. We appreciate you.
Okay, Bob. We'll see you, buddy.
Thank you.
Well, it makes sense because you figure there's a lot of golf outings out there, but there's not a lot of disc golf
there
outings.
There is a lot.
Not
we
outings,
just you
though.
Just there is
up around here though. Everybody like
no, there's people like the
I don't know, Bob.
Man, I'm telling you, I mean, like out in Valparaiso,
outings.
There was one tonight, I think.
I'm just saying around here, every company, every business in Northwest Indiana has a golf outing.
I understand that. So we're going to do a disc golf outing. Right. I'm going to figure that out. All right, let's move on.
All right.
This next story comes to us from our old pal Tim Binall.
All right.
Coast to Coast AM. Family's dinner interrupted when a man claiming to be a ghost wanders into their home.
Wow. That would interrupt dinner for sure.
It would definitely interrupt my dinner. Yeah. A family in Florida were understandably bewildered when a man wandered into their home with the wild claim that he was a ghost. The very weird incident reportedly occurred last Thursday evening in the city of Fort Myers as Brian McCaslin and his two daughters had just sat down for dinner. Their meal was quickly interrupted by what seemed to be someone knocking on their front door. When McCaslin went to see who it was, he was surprised to find a man in a bathing suit standing in their living room, and the exchange followed was nothing short of bizarre. "He started to tell me that he was a ghost," the homeowner recalled, "and I shouldn't be able to see him, and he was shocked that I could see him. He thought he was walking around and nobody could see him."
Well.
As one might imagine, the situation left the end of the strange visit as the apparition, who identified himself as Kevin, proceeded to lock himself inside of the trunk of the work crew outside the home. Much like his appearance during the family's dinner, Kevin's occupation of the vehicle did not last very long, as workers were able to convince him to exit the truck. He subsequently fled the scene and promptly vanished, ironically, not unlike a ghost. For his part, McCaslin reported that the unsettling encounter to the police, though he opted not to press charges. "I think it's all wild," he said, expressing hope that we can find this individual and give them the help they need. Hashtag panic state. Remember...
Yeah.
This individual's probably very disturbed.
Sure.
So let's be gentle about
it.
Yeah,
you know, Bob, though, I never the ghost itself, I mean, they usually don't want to be, for the most part, don't want to be seen, right? They want to just go about their business and not make too much of a ruckus. But, you know, there is that time where you catch a ghost by accident. The ghost might be surprised that you caught them, and they're surprised you see them, and you're surprised you're actually seeing ghosts. So, Bob, it could happen at the end of the day. That's all I'm saying. You never know. What's your take on it?
I hope this individual gets found, and I hope they can get the help they need.
Yeah.
I think that's the correct answer.
Yeah.
I'm very, very sensitive to mental health and stuff like that, as all of you guys may know. With that being said, what a wild thing to just turn around and be like, whoa, dude, there's a dude in my house who's saying he's a ghost. I have to give him credit. That is definitely one way... one way of trying to get away with something.
But I'm thinking about it as an actual thing here, Bob. I mean, a ghost that could not want to be seen, and you see the ghost, and it's you kind of end up spooking each other. I mean, I don't know if it's that far, maybe not that far-fetched at the end of the day, and we'll have to research more stories about this.
Absolutely. All right, ready to move on to our last news article?
Sure.
This was written by Emma Bowman on the NPR. A fluorescent green Venice canal is scaring residents, and police are on the case. Something's in the water in Italy, famed green, Grand Canal in Venice. The Venice locals woke up to a mysterious patch of fluorescent green in the central waterway on Sunday. The verdant stench hugged the embankment near the Rialto Bridge and appeared to spread as the day went on, based on images posted to social media. Police are investigating the origin of the liquid after residents reported the spectacle to authorities Sunday morning. Luca Zazia, the governor of the Veneto region, said on Twitter. Italy's fire and rescue agency said it's working with local environmental officials to identify the substance from collected samples of the water. A range of theories have surfaced online, some speculating algae growth and others pointing a finger to environmental activists. City Councilman Andrea Pegadoro blamed climate activists, CNN reported, who have been targeting Italian cultural sites in recent months. The group Ultima Generazione, which has poured charcoal in the fountains in Rome last three times since April in protest, told the network that the green coloring wasn't us. The timing of the emerald patch aroused suspicion. The Vogna rowing Regina, which is amateur crews finishing along the Grand Canal, took the place over the weekend. The amateur boat event aims to celebrate the Venice lagoon environment as well to protest wave motion from excess motorboat traffic that riles the city. For many, the bright green waters calls amid to the 1968 exploit by eco artist Nicolas Garcia Uriburu. According to the Metropolitan Museum of Art, Uriburu colored the waters of the Venice Grand Canal that year with neon green called Fluorocean to promote environmental awareness. Hashtag panics take.
I mean, that's an interesting story, Bob, at the end of the day. I mean, and two, oh, man, something just spooked me. You see that in the corner there? You're watching on Jet TV. It's a hooded figure. Oh, just Sonny Santana back there.
Never mind.
You can see how spooked I would be. His back turned towards me, a hooded figure. No, Bob, again, nothing really all that menacing around here. I mean, probably the most, at the end of the day, chill story of the evening. Not much to say.
What if you just woke up and saw, like Michigan glowing green?
I don't know. It's kind of a relaxing.
After we just got done talking about the UFO thing is real.
Yeah, I mean, nothing, it's kind of relaxing. Have you ever just parked your car and look at Lake Michigan at night?
Not with it glowing green.
But that's
I'm going to probably get
that
out.
That might be for the toxins and stuff like inside.
One of the WJOB producers is here, Sonny. Can you ask Sonny what he would do if he reacted and saw a Lake Michigan glowing green? Would you stick around, Sonny?
If you saw Lake Michigan glowing green, would you stick around?
I don't know. I might, because I see that all the time at Lake Michigan by the
YMV. Well, glowing green. Glowing green. Like, this is, like, the image is straight out of, like, Ghostbusters.
You're talking about, like, a menacing
green. Like, menacing green.
Yeah.
This is happening post-St. Patrick's
Day. Yeah, this is in Venice, Italy.
Oh, you know what? I did see a story about
this. Yeah, isn't that, would you stick around to watch that, or would you peace out?
I think it's kind of tranquil.
That's what I'm saying. I'm out, man.
Seems kind of tranquil.
Thank you, Sonny. Well, at least somebody in this studio makes sense on that side of the glass.
It's like a nice color.
All right, Panic, you ready to take a quick break?
Yes, I am.
All right, folks, stick around. Our live fans, stay tuned. And for our podcast fans, stick around. You're about to be hearing words from a podcast that you should be listening to. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Ghostly.
Pat, what are you doing?
What? I want people to know that we're a podcast that takes a deep dive into some of the scariest ghost stories.
But we don't do the creepy voices or weird sound effects. We debate the ghost stories. And aren't you supposed to be the skeptic?
I am, but they'll find that out once they listen.
Look, all you have to do is tell them to listen to Ghostly, and that our listeners get to decide which stories are real.
And which stories are just old folklore.
Exactly.
Download Ghostly wherever you find great podcasts.
Oh, jeez.
And we're back. Oh, hey there, Count.
Oh, hey there, Bob.
What'd you do during break?
Bob, during the break, you wouldn't believe it.
I wouldn't believe it.
I dyed the Lake Michigan green.
All of it green.
All of it green.
That's a big lake.
From Indiana to Illinois to Wisconsin to Michigan, it's all green.
It's all green.
Yep.
That's what you use.
Well, you know, a little food coloring here and there.
Just food coloring?
Yeah, a lot of food coloring.
That's a lot of food coloring.
It set me back a little bit to dye a whole Lake Michigan with just a little bit of
food. What was the purpose of you doing that?
Because I want to prove a point that just because the river is green doesn't mean it's all bad.
You know what I did during break?
What'd you do?
I took a pickleball.
You took a pickleball.
I took a pickleball.
How you like it?
I'm now the world champion.
You're the world champion
of
pickleball?
World champion pickleball player.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Man. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Yes. All right. Count Panic.
Yeah.
Welcome back.
I'm excited to be back.
Count, it's Bob After Camp Bob After Dark here on Bob After Dark.
We're officially entering
summer long. We're looking into spooky camp and summer lore and all of that kind of jazz because, you know, people are enjoying the outdoors. They're having bonfires. But little did you know that there is spookiness creeping behind every corner.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And, not even your happy-go-lucky people enjoying just a barbecue are safe from the paranormal and the unusual. So all throughout this summer, we're going to be looking at Camp Bob After Dark, where we're going to be looking at these weird, macabre, paranormal ghost stories. Last week, we talked about some haunted campgrounds and places that you can go camping. And this week, we have a very cool treat.
Yeah.
Yes, we're going to be talking about campfire stories.
Campfire stories.
Campfire stories.
Campfire.
So these are blatant fake ghost stories, guys. I know what you're thinking. You're like, oh, come on.
Are you sure they're not?
I'm pretty sure they're fake.
All right.
But there are some blatantly stories that you probably have heard some reiteration or another over the years of like just some odd, spooky noise, you know, stories that you would tell each other around the campfire all throughout, you know, maybe your childhood and your adolescence. I'm sure you've shared a couple in your years, Count, over the fire, correct?
Bob, yeah, of course. The best ghost stories are told over the fire. And here at Camp Bob After Dark, we strive to tell the best stories. And I'm surprised that glowing campfire behind you hasn't lost steam just yet. It's been
I just threw another log on.
Threw another log on the fire. Wow, you have s'mores?
No, we can't eat on the microphone, man. That's unprofessional.
Too. It's been done before, though.
No, you shouldn't.
We
do
won't
it.
Do it. And look at the beautiful sky behind you, too.
Yeah, I know. It's just it's beautiful. That's the Hammond, Indiana.
It's Hammond, Indiana, right there. It's amazing.
So.
Yeah. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Sunny says the stars are there. Yeah.
You know, so Steve was supposed to be here tonight. We were supposed to have him join in, which I think he's calling.
He's going to be calling in a minute, he says.
Sounds good. Yeah. So we're going to have Steve on. Usually we'd be checking in with him and doing the news articles with him. But all three of us tonight have a campfire story.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. So all three of us are going to be telling a different campfire story that maybe you guys have heard, or is there something brand new? But sit back, toast your hands up to the fire, and enjoy a creepy ghost story around the campfire. You know, I want to say that, like, although these stories might most likely be fictitious, I would say that some of these stories, they're like, you know, the original creepypastas, right? We do creepypasta month, and we do creepypastas throughout the year on here, and those are fictitious stories. However, I would say that they have a big place in, you know, what we do, what we do here in telling, telling ghost stories and paranormal stuff. Anything that you could do to set a mood or set like a thought process to get somebody interested in this kind of a thing. And this is usually somebody's like gateway into being more into the paranormal focused.
That's true.
So,
I mean, think about that hit show when we were kids, Bob. Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Yes, 100%.
It was the Midnight Society. They sat around the campfires telling stories. And those stories were horrifying.
And I would tell you that was some of my earliest, like, taste into the paranormal. You know, I had Are You Afraid of the Dark, The Twilight Zone. And, I mean, sure, those are extremely fictitious stories, but it definitely piqued my interest in studying actual paranormal phenomena and where I'm at now in my life.
Yeah.
So I have one of my favorite paranormal ghost stories of all time. That's not, This is more true crime, but I'm going to do it anyway. You know,
it's meant for the campfire.
It's meant for the campfire. And stop me if you heard this one before.
Okay.
A couple pulls in the lover's lane, and maybe there's different variations to this. The boyfriend's about to go off to the military. Maybe it's right after prom, but yeah, they're about to start canoodling in the car, if you catch my drift.
Catch your drift.
When all of a sudden they hear a scratching on top of the hood of the car.
All right.
Boyfriend goes out to investigate and goes missing, and the young lady pops out of her car and looks at the top and see claw marks on the roof left by the dreaded hook man.
The hook man?
The hook man.
Oh, yeah.
So this is one of the greatest campfire ghost-like legends of all time. This is campfire lore 101 is the hook man. So I'm actually going to be reading this from the Scholarly Community Encyclopedia. You would think that's a weird place for me to find material, but this is like an educational breakdown of the concept of the hook man. So just join me, ladies and gentlemen, if you will, for a terrifying tale that'll shiver your bones to the core.
Oh, man. And I think while you're
reading, you get Steve all prepped, and I'll be here on my end, okay?
Steve, well, he'll listen in.
Sounds good. Steve, are you there?
Bring Steven.
Steve,
are you there? Oh, hey there. Oh, hey there.
Oh, hey there, Steve. You're not here.
I am not there. You know, despite my best efforts, traffic getting to the studio was terrible. So had to turn around, which is awful because I actually did research today.
I don't believe him. Do you believe him, Count?
Well, he claims he did. Why would I doubt the man?
You know, it's because I called him this morning, and I'm not even joking with you when I say this. I legitimately called Steve, and he was like, oh, are we on for tonight? I'm like, yeah, because Steve was supposed to come back to the studio and whatnot. And I was like, how much do I have to pay you to be prepared for tonight's episode? Steve's like, all right, I'll bite. What are we doing? And I told him. And Steve said he had preparation.
Yeah.
I did. Your check cleared, Bob.
Oh, you bring joy to my heart, Steve. I'll let you get settled in and everything, and we'll do a quick plugs for you at the end of the segment. Sound good?
Sounds good. Thank you.
No problem. All right. So the story we got coming in is the story of the Hook Man. Is an urban legend about a killer with a pirate-like hook for a hand attacking a couple in a parked car. The story is thought to date from at least the mid-1950s and gained a significant attention when it was reprinted in an advice column in Dear Abby in 1960. It has since become a morality archetype in popular culture and has been referenced in various horror films and the such. The basic premise involves the young couple cuddling in a car with the radio playing. Maybe they're listening to Frankie Valiant or something. Suddenly, a news bulletin report that a serial killer has just escaped from a nearby institution. The killer has a hook. For varying reasons, they decide to leave quickly. And in the end, the killer's hook is either found hanging from the door handle or embedded into the door itself. Different variations include a scraping sound on the car door. Some versions start the same way, but have the couple spotting the killer, warning others, and narrowly escaping with the killers holding on to the car's roof. In another version, the woman sees a shadowy figure watching the couple nearby. The man leaves to confront the figure, who suddenly disappears. Thinking that his date just imagined it, the man returns to the car, only to see that the woman has been brutally murdered with a hook. In an alternative version, the couple drive through an unknown part of the country late at night and stop in the woods because either the man has to relieve himself or the car breaks down and the man leaves for help. While waiting for him to return, the woman turns on the radio and hears a report of an escaped mental patient. She is then disturbed by many times by a thumping on the roof of the car. She eventually exits and sees the escaped patient sitting on the roof, banging the man's severed head onto it. Another variation has the woman's seeing the man's butchered body suspended upside down from a tree with fingers scraping the roof. In another version of this variation, he's hanging right side up with either his blood dripping on the roof or his feet are scraping against the roof. There's other versions, and the man does return to the car, only to see his date brutally murdered with the hook embedded inside of her. Other tales have the woman leaving the car when her date doesn't come back, only to see his mutilated body, either on the car's roof, nailed down a tree, or just short stops away. As she starts to panic, she runs into the maniac and is also killed. And of course, just like any other one of these stories, there's another variation where the woman is discovered by the police. While being escorted to safety, she is warned not to look behind her, and when she does so, she sees a grisly aftermath of the man's murder. A similar legend recounts that a young couple are heading back from a great date when their car breaks down, either from running out of fuel or malfunction. The man decides to head off, head off on foot to find somebody to help with the problem while the woman stays behind in the car. She then falls asleep while waiting and wakes up to see a hideous person looking at her through the window. Luckily, the car is locked, so the person can't get inside. But to the woman's horror, the person raises both of his arms to reveal that they are holding her date's severed head in one hand and the car keys of another. The fate of the woman is never revealed. The origins of the Hookman legend are not entirely known, though according to folklorist and historian Harold Brunvard, the story began to circulate sometime in the 1950s in America. According to Brunvard, the Vanishing Hitchhiker, American Urban Legends and Their Meanings, the story had become widespread by American teenagers by 1959, and expanded all the way into the 60s. Snopes writer David Mickelson, which I would have never thought I'd be quoting Snopes on the show, has speculated that the legend has roots in real-life Lovers Lane murders such as the 1946 Texas O'Connor Moonlight Murders. The first known publication of the story occurred in November 8, 1960, when a reader letter telling the story was reprinted in Dear Abby, a popular advice column. It goes by the following. Dear Abby, if you're interested in teenagers, you will print this story. I don't know whether it's true or not, but it doesn't matter because it served purpose for me. A fellow and his date pulled into their favorite Lover's Lane to listen to the radio and do a little necking. That's a good way of putting it.
I love that.
You could tell that was the 60s, boys. The music was interrupted by an announcer who said there's an escaped convict in the area who had served time for robbery and assault. He was described as having a hook instead of a right hand, and the couple became frightened and drove away. When the boy took the girl home, he went around to open the car door for her. Then he saw a hook on the door handle. Mm. And the article ends with, I will never park to make out as long as I live, and I hope this does the same for kids, signed Jeanette. Literary scholar Christopher Pritchard traces the plot dynamics to a legend to Victorian literature, particularly the 1913 horror novel The Lodger by Mary Adelaide Belloc Lowndes. Though the two narratives have little in common, he notes that both are built upon the threshold relationship of crime, dirt, and chance. Such a reading also implies reconsideration of the historical tragedy of the urban legend, usually read as a product of postmodernist consumer culture. Folklorists have interpreted the long history of this legend in many ways. Some say that the hook is some interesting imagery, and it's a symbolic of ending innocence of teenagers. Some say it's a representative of normal people who follow the rules in society and who are not, so they just tell that story to scare people into
not to be making out
in random forests.
Necking.
But this is a very popular story. Have you two heard this before I did this, I'm assuming?
I have. I was more, it's a darker version of Peter Pan than I remember.
Thanks, Steve. I appreciate that.
Yeah, no, you're welcome. I didn't like the omission of Tinkerbell, but it's a good story.
I've heard of it. This is a classic one.
This is a classic story, and there's tons of variations. The one I've always heard was that the boyfriend gets out of the car, and she finds the body you know, decapitated. That's the one I always heard growing up.
What was that
up.
Movie, Urban Legend?
Urban Legend, I think they did this.
They addressed this.
Yeah, and loosely, I Know What You Did Last Summer
yeah.
is loosely based on the Hookman legend as well.
Yeah, it makes sense. Good one, Bob. I'm spooked. Camp Bob.
Camp Bob After Dark, man.
It does. It got me.
Steve.
Yes, Bob.
What do you got for us? We're going to let Kyle Panic finish the night.
Okay, yeah. I mean, look, I've got a lot more free time on my hands nowadays, so I was actually able to do a bit of a deep dive on this one.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah, who would have thought? So this is a story that actually stuck with me growing up, because I remember reading it in a compilation book called In a Dark, Dark Room, and this story terrified me to no end. And it is the story, The Girl with the Green Ribbon. The gist of this story is it's a love story. It's a love story between two people named Jenny and Alfred. Jenny always wears a green ribbon around her neck, and every time Alfred asks about it, she tells him that she will let him know when the day is right. Eventually, the couple get married, and Alfred never once sees Jenny without the ribbon around her neck. Until finally, Jenny is on her deathbed, and she reveals the secret of the green ribbon. She asks Alfred to untie the ribbon, and immediately her head falls off her neck and rolls to the ground. Now, there's many iterations of this story. They all have very similar beats. The biggest difference is usually the color of the ribbon. Sometimes it's green, sometimes it's yellow, sometimes it's red. There's a story where it's essentially a velvet choker, but all of the beats are generally the same. The history of this story is actually quite fascinating, because its origins are generally dated back to French legends going back at least to the 17th century.
Huh.
It is commonly believed that it is connected to the French Revolution and the use of the guillotine at the time. It is believed that young people, through soirees and parties that involved fashion, that symbolized revolutionaries who were punished via the guillotine, hence the ribbon. So it's not difficult to understand how this has evolved over time. In 1824, the story was basically an oral story. It was told from person to person, until it was included in Washington Irving's book, The Adventures of the German Student. I'm sorry, that was the name of the short story, The Adventures of the German Student, which was in a collection called The Tales of a Traveler. That version involved a velvet necklace, and was told to him personally by Thomas More, who's another famous author. In the 1970s, the story got called back up with a story called The Velvet Ribbon that was included in a children's book called Ghostly Fun by Anne McGovern. In that version, it was a black ribbon, and it involved the husband cutting the ribbon off versus other versions where he took it off willingly. And then in 1984, Alvin Schwartz adapted the story for In a Dark, Dark Room and Other Scary Stories. Alvin Schwartz, as you may know, Bob, Are you familiar with who he is?
I am familiar with the name, yes.
He is the man that wrote Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
Yeah.
And this book was a precursor to the Scary Stories books. So there's a nice long actual lineage to this story that all basically keep the same story beats. But it's fascinating that it's believed to have come from the French Revolution in the 17th century. What do you think about that, Bob?
I very much appreciate it when the stories that we tell have, you know, a lineage dating back something. I would have never guessed it was that old, but even like when we look at the story of the Hook Man, I mean, those things were dating back to even the, you know, early in Victorian age. So that's very fascinating. And it's funny you bring that up and you're saying that the different variations have the different ribbon colors, because the ribbon I vaguely remember from that story is it's yellow.
Yes.
So that is very fascinating to me.
Yeah, you know, and it's I think it's all in relation to the fact that this was a story that was told fittingly around a campfire. This was a verbal story. So people would change the color of the ribbons. So to hear it as a yellow ribbon was not uncommon. To hear it as a red ribbon, a black ribbon, a green ribbon. You know, it's very fascinating. I'm a big fan of when these things, when we're able to actually trace things back to actual points in history.
Well, that book too you mentioned there, Steve, In a Dark, Dark Room, that was very popular in my local library as well. Kids used to check that out all the time. It was a really hot seller. It's probably out there still in publication somewhere, but
is that okay? Correct me if I'm wrong. The two of you, is that the one with the cover of the skeleton man face smoking a corncob pipe?
He's looking out the door, isn't he?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it does have a skeleton man on it.
Spooky skeleton, you could say.
Yeah, you know that I remember reading it as a child. It was also very popular in my school's library. And then being like, oh, I got to see what everybody's reading, and then reading it and being so terrified that I never read another story in that book. Mm. And looking back on it, it's a pretty tame and basic story. But you know, when you're a young kid, just the idea that someone's head could just kind of fall off their neck is. It's kind of frightening.
Terrifying. It's still terrifying as an adult to think about. Did you find the cover there, Bob?
I did. So I'm looking at it right now. And I want to point out that the story of the girl's head coming off with the ribbon is in an I Can Read Level 2 book. And I want to point I know you laugh.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
But second grade Bob, I have vague memories of reading this, and even vaguer memories of maybe my mom was reading this to me at some point. But like, I could tell you right now by the cover of this book, it's got like a skeleton, some sort of hobgoblin creature, a witch deal, and a pirate all looking opening up like a cabin door, and there are some eyes just peering out the door, and these creatures are scared of these eyeballs. I can tell you that this has shaped my entire life. Between that and, by the way, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark is the one with the weird skeleton face man smoking a corncob pipe in like a cornfield. Okay. I don't know if you guys remember that book cover, but that's the one that's synonymous with my brain. But yeah, no, I have a vague memory of this. And I just want to point out that terrifying story, which still gives me the creepies in, you know, the age 32 that Steve just said, was probably read to me as a second grader. So
okay.
I'm assuming that has shaped my entire life.
All the pieces are falling together tonight, Bob.
Yeah, right? I'm just waiting for a Count Panic story now.
Well, are you guys ready?
I listen, any time that you're giving me something, Steve will give me something if I beg.
Sure.
You.
Yeah, ask nicely. Yeah.
You, this is a treat.
All right, well, let's see.
I'm letting you do the work, sir.
All right, well, I'm gonna make this a little – I'll turn off the lights here. If you're watching on Jed TV, it makes more sense. If you're listening to a podcast or on the radio, just use your imagination. I'm just doing some visual
Steve
stuff
Steve is probably sitting in his his living room, just like, get this over with, guys.
All right, here we
have Elf to watch.
I'm in my dinosaur onesie right now. I'm ready.
Steve, I turned the lights off, and I'm got a little my camera light here, so we're
it's total Bob After Dark production quality, Steve.
We're totally in the dark here. I got my light towards my face, like a true campfire story. So listen, this is a tale first introduced by Mark Twain. Mark Twain, are you taking photos?
I am. This is wonderful.
It's The Golden Arm. The story's called The Golden Arm. And I remember a variation of this as a kid. There's several variations of this, you could say, told many different ways. Mark Twain told us once, kind of like as a prototype of how you should tell scary stories and whatnot. You're going to get up and take a photo too? All right, I'll just keep on going. On how to tell scary stories and how to actually, you know, hold an audience and hold a crowd and tell a bona fide, a great ghost story, is what you will. And now when I grew up, I kind of heard the variation of the golden cane. It was a man whose golden cane was stolen, but it seems like the most popular one is called the golden arm. So I will get to right now if you guys are both ready. Here we go.
I'm ready.
All right. Again, the story, the golden arm. I should do this. One second. Here, let me try to put this in.
Look at this guy showing us up, Steve. He's got sound effects.
Production value here. All right, here we go. Long ago, there lived a man and a woman who loved each other very much. But the man loved his wife so much that he bought her anything her heart desired. One terrible stormy night, the woman was out walking along the road on her way home when she was hit by a car that slid on wet pavement. Car crashed into her, nearly killing her. She survived, luckily, but the accident lost her left arm. She lost her left arm in the accident. The man was devastated and wanted to make sure his wife was as comfortable as possible. So he arranged to have the golden arm fashioned or placed his wife's lost one, a golden arm. He pampered and spoiled her for many years, but the wife never seemed to recover from her accident. When the days grew longer, she knew her time was coming along. She said, "Please, just bury me with my golden arm. That's all I ask of you. Bury me with my golden arm." She eventually died and was buried with her golden possession, as she wished. Years passed, and the man never could quite get over his wife's death. Depression and grief controlled him, and soon he fell into a huge debt from years of lavish spending and increasing medical expenses. Soon he faced bankruptcy and foreclosure. He was penniless and needed a miracle. Desperate times called for desperate measures. He knew that what needed to be done. Late one night, he snuck out to the cemetery and carefully dug up his dearly beloved wife's coffin. He ever so easily removed the golden arm from its position, placed the coffin back into the ground, and filled the hole. He took the arm to the nearest jeweler and sold it for enough money to cover his misfortunes. He soon began to regain control of his life. On the anniversary of his wife's death, he remembered her fondly, had a hearty meal, and went to bed. But boys, it was a stormy night, much like the night we are sitting here at this campfire. It was a stormy night, much like the night of the accident. The man felt a sudden chill come over his body. He laid in his bed, not able to sleep. He closed his eyes, drew the blankets around him, when he heard a loud knock at the door. It was followed by a haunting moan. "Where is my golden arm?" He couldn't believe it. He must be dreaming. He heard a knock again. And once again another moan. "Where is my golden arm?" He kept hearing it. "Where is my golden arm? Where is my golden arm?" He closed his eyes tighter when all of a sudden, the door shut. Just like that. Then, he could feel footsteps coming. He heard the footsteps coming to his bed.
I married a morning person.
not part of the story. That's a YouTube ad. He felt.
Oh, no!
He felt. That dang YouTube ad was going to get me eventually. Let's regroup there. He's under his covers, guys, when he hears again, "Where is my golden arm? Where is my golden arm?" He said, "This can't be happening. I must be dreaming. My wife has been dead for years now, and what, she could be coming back for this golden arm?" After the door slammed, more footsteps. Suddenly, the voice grew closer. "Where is my golden arm? Where is my golden arm? Where is my golden arm?" Then nothing. Silence. The man thought it was done. He peeked underneath the blanket when all of a sudden he heard a voice say, "It was you!" That's the tale of the golden arm.
Now, Count, I have a very important question to ask you before we talk about your wonderful story. Yeah. Was that sound effects you're using royalty-free?
Yeah, we're good with that, Bob.
Okay, thanks. Steve's got my back.
I use the door, the royalty-free door knock.
What about that background?
The blood-curling screen, and this is also creepy cabin sound effect. It's all royalty-free.
Okay, good, good.
Yes. I have a follow-up question to all that.
Yeah.
Why don't you own YouTube Premium?
I don't know. You know what? You think a radio station would have that, but we don't. We're money's tight around here. But, I mean, that's the, you know, it's a classic tale. I don't know. Have you guys heard that one before? It's kind of popular.
I'm going to be honest with you. I've never heard that one before.
Steve, you had to hear this one.
I have heard this one before. And I haven't heard the cane version, but I have heard the golden arm version.
That's the popular one, it seems like. But there was a book I had as a kid, and they had the golden cane version where it was a man whose golden cane, he asked to be buried with his golden cane, and his wife took his golden cane and came back saying, "Where is my golden cane?" And then this one, it seems like it would be the popular one, the arm one. But I mean, it's a simple ghost story. The key is the ending, right, guys? It's the ending of the story. You got to do that. You got it. And then maybe like a scream at the end of it. And that's what really gets the campers going. But a great story to tell at a campfire, I tell you that.
I would say so. Yeah.
All classics here tonight, guys.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
I got to give you kudos, Count. I've never heard that one before, and I'm a Mark Twain guy, so you would think like I would have like double heard that
story.
Yeah,
I guess this is he has roots to this story. He like used it as a building block to teach people how to tell stories, essentially. Pretty cool.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Steve, what did you think of the story?
I that one always gets me, you know, and like Panic said, it's the finish to it. It was you, and then the big scream just over the top, and that'll always scare you.
Yeah. No, it's spooky.
I love it.
You know what scared me is thinking that the sound effects he wasn't using was royalty free, and I was going to get a legal notice.
Bob, I don't think the door people are going to come for you.
Listen, if I come to the studio next week and the what are they called? The sound creators. What's the term? I'm blanking from production.
Copyright?
No, the people that make noises for movies.
The Foley
artists. Yeah. If the Foley Artist Union is here next week protesting me, I'm going to give them to you.
I tell you, this station has done a lot of sound effects in the past, and we haven't yet to get busted for anything.
Yeah, well, so listen, good. I'm just saying, Steve's going to be the one emailing them tonight, be like, "Are you the creator of Door Creek 075?
How could you own the rights to a door? I guess you can, but it makes you kind of want to go out. I'm not saying this fire is not real in the studio, but it kind of makes you want to go out to a real fire now and tell these ghost stories.
Listen, man, nothing brings me greater joy in life than telling a ghost story around a campfire, real or not. And it's funny because some of the tropes that you hear in these ghost stories, and this is something I'd like to do again in the future because there's a lot of these. You know, you look at the story of like the vanishing hitchhiker, right? And that concept of an urban legend, and you could make up whatever character you want and say that, you know, the hitchhiker vanished. But here in Chicago, we have probably one of the world's most famous, like, legitimate ghost stories that is based on the vanishing hitchhiker story. And, you know, there it is, an actual ghost story that's not like, you know, fire telling stuff.
Yeah.
Not to say that you can't tell like an actual like ghostly encounter over a fire, but most of the time you want it to be over the top. You want to freak your friends out.
Go crazy.
You know, that's the part where you're like, and then I found the hook, and then you reach out and you pull out a hook.
That's yeah, yeah. A hook arm.
I found this hook by the fire.
Or you could be like, and then she removed the ribbon, and then you pull out a severed head.
Yeah, that's yeah, man. I only my supply of severed heads is it's just immaculate.
I got a guy.
Did you improv with a guy back in the day? Oh boy, that was good. I'm glad the Camp Bob After Dark was a good week.
We earned our merit badges.
Yes. So before we go, because Steve is late, Steve can talk to us about what Steve's up to now and tell us in case this is somebody's first episode in exposure, who is Steve and why am I giving him so much phone time?
Okay. When you put it that way, you know, I've been doing good. Ben just got back from, wrestling in Huntsville, Alabama.
Did you see a leprechaun?
I did not, but I also wasn't actively looking for a leprechaun. Do you know what? Next time I go down, we'll live stream while I do a leprechaun hunt.
That sounds great.
But no, been doing well, and you know, was really looking forward to being in studio tonight, and the Fates had other plans.
It is okay. It's not like you're not here, but in case you guys are wondering, Steve is a professional wrestler. On again, off again, regular co-host here on Bob After Dark. And, yeah, we love having Steve here. Steve's also a paranormal investigator and a fan of all things spooky and has threatened to take me on an RV trip around the country hunting ghosts recently. So that's how dedicated Steve is to this.
Hey, I mean, it's not like you have anything else better to do, Bob.
This
golf, yeah. It's not like I can't pack my disc golf bag. It's like a satchel. That's it.
We'll in between our RV stops at haunted places across North America, we'll also stop at different disc golf courses, so you can go froth.
I appreciate that. And by the way, guys, if you're looking for Steve merch, you can go on prowrestlingtees.com/ChicagoBearHug, and you can get Steve Michaels merch. Steve's t-shirts are worn by both me and Panic. Not tonight, but we have Steve Michaels t-shirts.
I mean, it's radio. They wouldn't know.
I could lie, yeah, in podcast land and be like, oh yeah, guys, I'm wearing my Steve Michaels shirt right now. I do own a Steve Michaels t-shirt. There's no lie there. But if you use discount code Bob After Dark at checkout, you get 20% off on your order.
One of these days, that's going to be true. but not tonight.
Steve, where are you wrestling next, brother?
I'm going to be in a week from Thursday. I'm going to be out in Honolulu, actually, for Oos Wrestling. I'm a big fan of working out there. It's always a pleasure. They got a great show out there for the people in podcast land out in Hawaii. I'll be out there. And then don't forget to always tune into OVW every Thursday night on Fight TV, 2 hours live TV.
And Steve, while you're out in Hawaii, make sure you tell them that you have your regular co-host on this really, really cool paranormal podcast and radio show. And I could totally do Hawaiian lore if they want to have me. I'll go out there and be your Andy Kaufman for the night.
I mean, I'm gonna go to a volcano, and maybe when I come back, we can talk about like Pele and that, stuff like that.
That would be great.
Well, don't pick up any tikis out there either. That's a bad thing.
I think one of the Brady kids did that.
One of the Brady kids picked up a tiki in
LA. No.
Yeah. A tarantula came out of nowhere.
Oh, so, boy.
Be careful out there.
Steve, do you have any closing words for our audience at home?
Yeah. Be good to each other.
I think it's
short, simple, sweet. Be good to each other.
Calm, Panic.
All right. If your spouse has a golden arm and it has to be buried with the golden arm, just let the golden arm rest with them. Don't try digging it up. No matter how bad the times are for you, let that golden arm rest.
And folks, thank you for watching and listening to another episode of Bob After Dark here on Camp Bob After Dark. To my mom, I just want to wish you sweet dreams. Dad, wherever you are in the universe, I hope you're happy, comfortable, and doing whatever it is that you want to do. And to Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I just want you to have the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody. And remember, the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are: not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
Memoriam Development.